Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/coldslither. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/coldslither.
The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Welcome to another assigned episode of the Quick Nations Comic Book Chronicles.
How do all these people get in here?
Very small. I
feel like this is the Netflix's reboot of Full House, Fuller House.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And tonight I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent_70 on Twitter.
I'm back!
We also have at PCN_dirt on Twitter. And we have three very special guests here with us tonight. We are proud to be joined by the creative team behind the Boom Studios Broken World number 1, which came out yesterday, June 3rd.
Massive yes. Applause. Oh, man, and the fanfare.
There you go.
All out for our guests. But, yes, we have Frank Barbary, Christopher Peterson, and Marissa Louis.
Yeah, just Marissa Louis.
Hooray.
Yeah! Welcome, one and all.
Thank you for having me and us. I mean, I don't want to speak for everyone like some kind of egomaniac.
You're so egotistical that you refuse to be on camera.
That's right.
Yeah, my agent didn't sign off on this.
Oh, no.
Completely false. My face
one
is valued.
Person on the team is too good for this show. Maybe all three are too good for this show, actually, now that I think about it. But.
My face is completely valueless.
That's right. So yes, thank you all for joining us tonight. So we're gonna find out a little bit more about how Broken World came about, the genesis of it, so to speak. I guess yes, let's start there. How did Broken World come about?
Well, in terms of our team, it was really the book is through Boom, and Boom has a knack for putting people together, and it's one of the cool things about working at the publisher. You can bring them creator-owned stuff, and if they have different people they want to collaborate with, they'll introduce you, etc. And they introduced me to Marissa and Chris, which was cool because, again, I am a fan of both of their work, and as you can see, we managed to come together and make something I'm really proud of. But so it's always almost a little intimidating when your team is kind of put together, but thankfully, like, my editors at Boom, Chris Rosa and Eric Harburn, have a really good sense of the projects that they do. They, again, work with people they trust, people they like, and people they respect. So I feel like things came together really easily, and it was nice that... Chris, when did we meet? What con was that where we first talked?
It's
Emerald City? Or?
No, it was New York.
Okay, I was going to say it would be too far long ago. But yeah, so we met in person. Marissa, I have never met other than this video screen, so
yeah,
hello,
thanks.
Marissa. I mean, if you want to talk about your own background, Marissa, please share, as I just stole Chris's. So. I taught Chris how to draw this book. Like, he's never drawn before, so. No, that's
yeah. They also they told me that I was going to be doing RoboCop, but then they ended up doing this.
Wait, is that true?
No, I'm just...
I was like, that's a bummer. Sorry.
We are fans of the RoboCop series on the show.
Thanks. So,
yeah.
Doug especially.
Yes, indeed. I especially love that one.
I like RoboCop a lot, too.
Oh, yes.
Marissa colors it. She won't say it, but she colors it.
Personal investment.
Yeah.
Did you do this stuff with Amonkhet, Marissa?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love his stuff, too. So, good job. Yeah.
There's a lot of really great people I got to work with on RoboCop, and like the RoboCop was an IP I've really loved for a long time. And I think Josh is somebody that really gets the joke, you know?
Of Robot Cop.
Yeah. And Chris, we met at Rose City in 2014?
No, we met at, what was the other one? Was it Wizard World? Wizard World Portland, yes.
I love how y'all have these memories to remember, you know, these first meetings, because I'm horrible with memory.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because I'm sure everyone's the same, but every con starts feeling like the same con. That's why I'm like, when was it? It was one of the shows like that we did.
Yeah, it feels the same. It feels like Emerald City and New York have a similar feeling to them.
Yeah, I feel like they get similar crowds of creators too. Like people tend to do those shows. I really want to do Rose City, but I'm lame.
No, come on, it's super fun.
What part of the year is Rose City?
It's the fall, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, I guess because New York's in the fall too. Yeah. So Broken World came up, I guess, put together, at least it started in the fall back at last year's New York Comic Con.
I can go into the actual, like, genesis of the book, I apologize, but that was when it came together creatively, but I had had the idea for the book, after we wrapped Black Market, which was a book I did at Boom last summer. We were talking, and I enjoyed working with my editors, and they were like, oh, well, what else would you want to do? And I was just kind of talking about books I had kind of percolating, and nothing was really exciting us, and there was nothing that we thought would be a good fit. And remember I was standing outside a sushi place that closed, waiting for my friends, and I was also just, like, annoyed that they didn't realize the restaurant closed. So I'm just sitting there, and I was thinking, because I knew I wanted to try to pitch something post-apocalyptic, but I didn't want to do, like, a zombie book. I didn't want to do something that was, like, I don't know, just I feel like the genre is really popular right now and can get very tired very quick, in my opinion, just because we're all so exhausted on this. I feel like post-apocalypse is a really pertinent metaphor right now just for people, and that's why it's so popular. But I was really enchanted by the idea of a world that still looked like our world, that wasn't Mad Max, that wasn't a giant crater or anything like that. And I just got thinking, like, oh, well, what if it was more of like a disaster situation? What's something that I think is fascinating? And I had the asteroid idea. And from there, I was like, well, what could the twist be? And I mean, at this point, should we just, like, say what happens in the book at the end?
Necessarily have to. Well, you know, you can describe it, although we'll ring the spoiler bell.
It'll be hard to talk about it.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
All right, you know what? We'll ring the spoiler bell. We're alerting everybody who might be listening or watching. We're about to just delve right into it, so feel free.
Well, anyhow, so we have the evacuation taking place, and the twist that changed the book for me was like, oh, well, what would happen if everyone thought this disaster was going to happen, Earth evacuated, and then the disaster didn't happen? And that was really what I realized we had something that could be a long series, something that's more of a global series, and essentially become what would happen to these people left behind. And again, it opened up a lot of possibilities. And I started talking to my editorial about that, and Eric immediately was like, okay, I'm really into this, and introduced me to Chris, and I started talking with Chris, and Chris really enjoyed it as well, and again, signed on as co-creator, and we really hit the ground running from there. And then finally, after much deliberation, Marissa thankfully joined us and brought beautiful color into our world as well.
What you don't know is that Chris was telling me some of this stuff because Chris and I are friends.
Yeah, well, and which was always nice too, to have people you know. I mean, as I just explained, how I didn't know either of these people.
I was like begging Chris to get on the project.
And I was like, no, Marissa, come on.
He's like, no, you don't understand what an asshole Frank is. You don't want in on this radar. But yeah, no, it's just, it's been good. I'm sorry, did I speak over someone like a tyrant?
No, I was just going to say the friendships definitely help with the collaboration, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, yes. I feel like it takes that wall down. I mean, I can't speak to you guys, but Five Ghosts that I am friends with you guys now, of course. But I feel like bringing people you know or have worked with before, like, really does kind of just take down that initial wall of, like, getting to know people and just, like, not so much in like a you might offend them feeling out comfort zones, but in a work way, like you kind of just get a much quicker shorthand and you can be a little more casual with stuff rather than like writing these like introduction emails like, hello, like this is me, like, and I want to make sure you don't think I'm an idiot. So let me just do that. Or sometimes like not so much at Boom, but or some of the greater companies, but sometimes like things can be very filtered through editorial, which can make things very cold. And it's fine because, I mean, a lot of work gets done that way, but I tend to prefer to be able to talk to people I'm collaborating with and kind of make it friendly because we're all doing something together and it shouldn't be like, got an email from the boss, shit, like something like that.
Well, and I like working with friends just because you have an established repertoire, right? And like you sort of know each other's visual languages pretty well. And Chris and I can talk about ideas and like we sort of can visualize how the other person is going to handle something if we're talking about ideas. So it makes that sort of talking about it a lot easier.
What she means by visualizing and conceptualizing is I say what I don't want to draw. And then she has to tell me.
And then I send you a script full of that stuff, right?
And, like, I usually make friends with whoever I color. Not all the time, but most of the time. I'm friends with them afterwards, so it's like... But I work on more projects than you guys, I think, right? No, Frank, you work on a ton of stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm always all over the place. I mean, writers, I feel like in color is, like, we can a little bit more than doing sequentials as it takes so much time. I mean, coloring takes plenty of time as well, but I feel like that's a crappy expectation on a lot of people who are coloring these days. Like, oh, you know, you're doing like 20 things, right? But I do a lot. And Chris, actually, you were working on Mayday at the same time, correct? So you actually were also doing multiple things.
I was, well, in between Grindhouse and Mayday, yeah, I was coming off one and on the other one as well. So yeah, there's a lot of overlap.
I feel like we all know, just like freelance, I feel like you need to know what you're doing 8 months ahead of time so you don't wake up one day and be like, oh shit, I'm not getting paid.
Right.
Yeah.
So here comes that cell phone bill.
I was just going to ask, is this series like in the can? Like, are you guys all done from your end just waiting for it to roll out?
No, I mean, we're ahead, thankfully, but I think we just sent 2 to press because it's coming out in July. Oh, jeez, I forgot it was June already. And I'm wrapping the script to 4 now, which is the end of the first arc. And we're hoping to do more, but it just, excuse me, I'm now like stuttering and coffee burping on my end. I apologize. I told you, I had a hard time at the coffee shop. I was very frightened by the man throwing a chair, and it changed the tenor of my whole day. But yeah, we hope to do more if the book is received well. I mean, I always say, like, I'm not going to put my publisher in a weird position if the book just finds no audience and just do it as a vanity project, because there's no point. There's a lot of books out there. And just to say we're all doing another one isn't a reason to do a book. But I don't know. I'm very happy with the reception so far. It's only been one day, and I feel like a lot of people were saying, like, the things I wanted them to say, at least from my end, like, intrigued by the premise. The twist was at least exciting, and just they got what I wanted them to get out of the book, which doesn't always happen as a writer, but I think that happened. I mean, I'm a huge fan of how the book looks, which I have nothing to do with, so good job, guys. I feel like there was a lot of cool positivity about the style of the book, which I think we all deliberately wanted to make very readable, especially for either newer readers or people who were less into, like, very, very dense, complicated, like, I don't know, just a different type of art. We were very concerned about storytelling, or at least that was one of my mantras for the book, because I want it to be very clean and very easy to read, which is why I think Chris and Marissa were a really good fit.
Yeah, so I definitely enjoyed how the art looked on it.
I was just going to ask, would a second arc be Broken World Issue 5, or would it be Broken World 2, No Zombies Issue 1?
It's going to be Broken World with zombies now. Please buy more. hopefully it'll be 5 if we keep going. So.
Breaking World.
What did you say? Did you say Bacon World?
No.
Broken World 2, Electric Boogaloo. That's what it's going to be. I just wanted to add, I know that that Dirt Doug has the cover on as his avatar. I actually picked up a physical copy at my comic shop yesterday, and I wanted to commend the I don't know if it was Chris who designed the cover, but I know that it was eye catching, and as well as the alternate or the variant cover. that was also, I mean, it kind of follows the same, you know, kind of arc, you know, dividing the cover. And it was pretty eye-catching. I liked the design. So it definitely stuck out on the stands.
Yeah, it wasn't me. It was the creative team brought, I guess, brought that to the design.
Well, then you had to make it work, though. So
well, yeah, I didn't make it
take,
work.
Take the credit.
we talked
a lot about that cover, and I'm really happy with how it ended up. I know Chris probably is too, but it's well, Chris, I think you could talk better than I can about working in that confined space.
that was the. It's kind of an interesting like challenge to be given that because you know you're used to a full size, so to put it into that. In a curve and trying to figure out what is going to happen within there is an interesting sort of developing challenge. And it turned into, people have been telling me that they really like that, the cover design and, you know, how it looks and the, you know, the people and colors and all that stuff. So it's, you know, in the end, it all works out pretty well. It was just getting used to it was a new thing.
I remember when we were like, well, we want a crowd shot. And you were like, you realize there's like a third of the cover available, right?
But that's and about how many people are left on the planet, right?
Yeah. Like, there was a lot of like, we want to put this, but we also want to put this, and we want to put this. And it's like, well, we're running out of space as we're doing it.
Well, it, especially speaking towards like an issue one and like thinking from like a consumer side of things, like, you want the cover to be designy, but you also want to convey like what is in there as much as possible. And it's definitely so much easier to talk about like on my end and be like, oh, you know, like just get the crowd shot in there, but make it work and just like highlight the main character, no problem. So I'm always very sensitive to my collaborators having to solve the problems of something that's very easy to talk about, which is probably writing comics in a nutshell. I mean, it's very easy to say, oh, draw Times Square crowded as hell. Moving on. and then color every single person in the crowd.
No.
Come on, make like you're George Perez and draw one of those big jam shots. There you go.
Don't waste space.
it was funny, though, as why we joke, like, there were a startling amount of crowd shots in the first issue, and right when we started collaborating, I'm like, Chris, what do you hate to draw? He's like, same stuff as every artist. Like, don't write, like, crowd shot cityscape, right, like that. then you got the script, and it was like,
page one.
Well, mostly every establishing shot has a crowd, but, you know, just roll with it, man.
A school with a crowd, and a launch area with a crowd, and a
security team with the crowd.
well, I feel like what people don't realize a lot about comic books and why I like writing is I feel like the artist has to do so much design on the fly, which is exciting for me because I'm not the one doing it. But we talked a lot about the environments a bit because, like, as you can see, like, the launch area is all very developed and Chris really gave it a sense. But, like, the initial script, and not in a self-deprecating way, but I'm like, they're in a launch area. there's no real reference point for that. And the book is a near future, so it's not quite modern era. So Chris also had to deal with that design aspect of like, okay, so how do we sell that it's the near future and not now? And I think you did a lot of cool stuff with wardrobe stuff, Chris. And then we had like the scene in the college where the kid's giving a presentation from his phone. And Marissa, was someone trying to ask you to make it blue? I think it was editorial saying they wanted the screen to be blue, but I know you ended up making it green. And it looks really cool, and I know you were adamant about the green.
Yeah. Chris, who is it? I think somebody in editorial is saying like it needs to look more like a projected screen, which like didn't make sense to me because like we're not going to see 1980s technology, even though I understand that's the shorthand for it. But
yeah.
Chris was just trying to needle me, mostly.
Well, I just kept on saying blue all the time.
Well, that's the, like all the sci-fi blue stuff, and I was like, this looks like this, no.
Well, and that's the kind of thing, like, when you work with a team, and I feel like why it's nice to have a rapport to be a little more casual, because the minute you start discussing something, you want it to be a discussion, not a, like, again, like someone, like the boss gave you instructions, like you have to make it this way. And I'm really glad, especially with our editorial at Boom, which is Eric Harburn and Chris Rosa, like I've worked with them a lot, like, and they're very collaborative and very, very excited to talk through things. If they have an idea, they present it as an idea, not as like a mandate. And that I think makes a huge difference when collaborating, just that it's something to be excited about, not something you have to do. And it's what I try to really like govern my own books, like across the board with when I can, to be a collaborator, not like a boss man.
So does the script actually say giving a presentation while wearing a fishbone t-shirt, or was that on the day on the plane?
No,
that's me. Everyone, I like to throw in little things every once in a while. You'll see it in issue 2. We also did something in.
We did something really fun in issue 2.
Well, I also like how the front of the passport almost looks like a Judge Dredd badge.
Yeah. I was sort of going for like a little bit of, like where the, it's, I don't know how to explain it, but like where the government is a little bit more stricter now than, because they sort of had to get their shit together a little bit more. Oh, my little friend. But,
Chris is so, a futurist.
So it's all a matter of like, you know, also appearances and everything else and making yourself look official. And then I didn't want to make it fully like necessarily, specifically to one country, because at the same time, it's kind of like, I don't know, meld together with other countries, but I guess it's a little bit slightly representative of the United States, but at the same time, not quite, you know?
Right.
So, just little stuff like that. And we didn't want to go too far future looking everything. So then, cause at one point I was thinking of, like, they'd be like a scan card and stuff like that, and, you know, and then the uniforms and things like that. And so it just kind of, I don't know, thinking about all those sort of things. And the same sort of thing happens when, what were we just talking about with the clothes and the badge, and all the hard work you have to do. Yeah.
And I'm so, just like, there's people, but they should look futuristic, so deal with that.
Yeah, but not too, like, it's just like, just slightly ahead, and whether the style changes a lot or whether it's a little bit. So it's just a whole lot of like figuring out, like, you know, I didn't want to make futuristic buildings and futuristic cars and futuristic, you know, this and that, because it's only jumped like, you know, what, 30 years or something in the future, not like 150 years in the future.
Well, and for me too, like, and what we talked about a lot for the story is like, so clearly they're evacuating Earth, and I'm really thankful that people don't seem to be caught up on it, because I didn't want people to get caught up with the science of the evacuation, because obviously the book is not really about the evacuation when you get to the end. But it was important to me to make sure that stuff was dealt with swiftly and not dwelled upon, because I didn't want to get a bunch of tweets like, just so you know, this is the way, like, space elevators would actually work, idiots. Like, because it was just a conversation that I feel like we really had to not skirt around, but handle how much we exposited, because we wanted it to be there and know that it's happening, but I didn't want the book to be about that.
And right, you didn't want it to be a focal point, because you got rid of, you know, I noticed that you dealt with it on page 2, so, it's like, all right, this is how we're getting into space, and we're dealing with the ramifications of, you know, picking and choosing, you know. I don't know if you're reading, it actually felt very much like something that's going on in one of the competitor company books. It's like, wait, they're choosing people who are going to survive into the secret wars? What? I don't know if you guys are reading that, but it definitely felt like that, just for a quick second.
Well, Broken World Secret Wars comes out.
Wait a second. There you go.
Strike me a lot about the book, though, is that the way that for most of the book, it is actually very calm. Like, there, you do see, you know, there's some protesting going on at the school, and of course when they're going at the end to go up into space, there are people on the other side of the fence who are freaking out. But most of the book is really more of a, I don't know if I want to say introspective, but it's definitely not like, hey, we've got to race through the burning cityscape, shooting, you know, mutants who are trying to climb on our car to make it to the extraction zone. It was just very much like, this is life, and this is what you do, and you go when it's your time, and take your turn, and people are just kind of, people who have been chosen are just kind of going along and doing their thing, not really worrying about it that much, it seems like.
Well, yeah, and I think that was, I'm sorry, whoever I just spoke over, but I know, just throw me under a bus and be on with it. But no, that was really a focus for me writing it, which I think carried really over into the art and then the color too. Like just the fact that they got a very somber vibe, not this crazy action vibe, especially in the front beginning of the book. I mean, things get intense and I think it really visually intensifies as well. But for me, like, that's why I'm like, I wanted to see people going about their lives, because if we found out this was happening, like, everyone wouldn't just lock themselves in their house until it was their time to go. Like, people would still have to live. Like, people would have to put their kids somewhere while they were going out and preparing. Like, and I mean, the college scene, again, this is all logistical stuff that we thought a lot about and talked out. And I was so worried people were going to be like, why the fuck are they at school or whatever? Like, things like that. But we literally say, like, that's the only place these people have to go. And the girl, Emma, who's there, like, she's not leaving the planet. Like, she thinks she's going to die and at least wants to, like, talk and be a human until that, versus, again, like, the other side of the spectrum, people who are choosing to commit suicide before this even happens because they don't want to deal with any of it. So, I don't know, I was glad people, and that's what I mean when I said I think people got what we wanted to from the book. They weren't asking these weird, bizarre, like, minutia plot questions. They were just enjoying, well, not even plot, but just, like, world-building questions.
Sure.
Just kind of taking what they were given, which I really enjoy, because I feel like we have very analytical readers in the space of, like, all entertainment right now. And
absolutely. I mean, the first thing that jumped into my mind that's kind of along those lines is, how is the electricity still running? But then I just kind of glossed over this. All right, you know, we'll get to that later.
We actually deal with that a little bit in Shoot,
right.
Sort of, but, well, it's fun. Yeah, I'm going to shut up now.
I like to pretend, or I like to think, that, like, there probably was some sort of thing that happened when this first was going to take place, like the whole, you know, lottery and stuff like that. And now people just, after that, was, you know, maybe months of that happened, right? Because, you know, this, like, they knew for the past, like, let's say, I don't even know, like, 5 years. Mm-hmm. And let's say the first, like, you know, 6 months or whatever, there was a lot of craziness. But we've already gone past that, and now we're on to, like, people are just like, okay, this is just the way life is. We can't do anything about it anymore, other than the last, you know, people that are left over.
Yeah, no, I very much agree, Chris.
For me, that was, like, one of the really appealing things about the script, because, my family has a tendency to go to countries, like, that aren't the most stable.
Canada.
One of my cousins is, like, working in Rwanda now. My mom, or my grandma, was up in, like, Georgia during the genocide, and I went to Armenia shortly after the USSR fell. And, like, the thing that is most striking coming from America is that people, they just keep on. Like, everybody stabilizes to a normal state after something tragic. Like you either, you can't handle it and you, like, totally give up, which I liked about this suicide cult, or you just, you just stabilize. You go, you know what, I can't control this. I'm going to go do my thing and I'm going to pretend like everything's normal and find ways to adjust to it. And I like, that's really my favorite element of the script.
And I feel like we don't see it in a lot of the more, like, and again, I like a lot of post-apocalyptic stuff. I'm not saying that one take is better. It's just apples and oranges. I feel like we get a lot of the crazy takes where suddenly everyone's running around shooting guns and flipping out, because that's the more action setting. And it was funny because when I was planning a lot of it, and I remember we were talking a lot, Chris, about this, like, my instinct was always to go to that so quickly, like, to turn it into Walking Dead really fast, where, like, they're just, like, factions really fighting in, like, very militaristic ways. But I have to really say, again, in talking it through, and also with editorial, we really wanted to find a much more interesting and unique take on it. And it really does deal with a lot more of that, like, survival. Like, you survive by normalizing, again, which, again, we see all over, like, really happening, because people go through really hard stuff constantly. And the book is really a lot about not having control over a huge event like this and just how you deal with that.
I want to go back, if I can, I want to bring back up that the suicide cult, the Children of the Revelation, because it's funny, like, when I read it the first time through, I kind of, like, glossed over them, like, yeah, of course there's going to be, you know, a cult of people that are going out to kill themselves, like, the end of the world is coming up. But then when I gave it a second read, I kind of, it stuck out to me more, and I was like curious, like it seems like something that could foster a bigger story down the line. Is that possible?
There's a lot of seeds, and I think even one of our reviews were like, I wish they went into more into detail about this guy and a little bit more detail about this guy. And I was like, well, next issue, there's going to be more stuff.
Keep reading.
That might have been my review, because I think I said that a couple of times.
Well,
yeah, you weren't the only one. Lots of people were like, we love this person, but what about them?
Fletcher was the one I brought up.
Yeah.
Well, definitely there's a reason why we chose to show everyone who appears in the first issue. And again, because it is a global story and we want to focus in on people who have very different viewpoints and seeing them come into conflict, especially in the new landscape of what the world is going to be like after. That was really where the story was for me. And I think that's where it ends up. And we will definitely get to kind of see the big players in this changed world and meet new people. And I don't know. I'm really happy with how the first four came together. Like, as I said, I hope we do more, but even if it does end at four, it will be a very, like, again, it will feel like a big chapter ending. You will get the kind of arc payoff from it. You will get the character payoffs and we'll say something with this verse arc. But as I said, it is a global story. We have a lot we can do. So we really just do hope people join us for the ride, so to speak. And again, it's definitely a cool experiment for me in terms of I've never had a book that had like such a cliffhanger-y like kind of twist at the end, and I'm really hoping that it does bring people back for issue two, because I know it is a tricky landscape. As I said, there's a lot of books out, there's a lot of really good books out, and people have, again, limited interest, limited money, limited time, and we just really hope that craft aside, like we're all so proud of the book and put really everything we can into it, but also just that we're telling a story that actually is interesting and is hooky and does have people wanting to come back month to month.
Definitely. You know, I wanted to give props to Marissa on the coloring of the cliffhanger page and the pages leading up to it, because that really sold the cliffhanger to me, because it was so dark and grim and red for multiple pages prior to that cliffhanger. And once, you know, I flip to the page, and this is one of the things that I do love about picking up my books before we do the show, because there's just things I don't get from digital. And if you actually have the comic in hand, you can really feel it. And, you know, I definitely, you know, flipping through, you know, sense the imminent, crisis and situation that was coming. And then when you get to black and then flip to the last page and you see how the coloring absolutely shifts, it's, you know, it really sold what, you know, where we're going and what's going to be happening from now on, you know, from now on. The crisis is, you know, ringing the spoiler bell again for people who've been listening partway through. The crisis is apparently passed, but there's, you know, there's more crises to come.
Yeah. Well, I was really, first of all, like, I think Frank does think about color when he's writing scripts, and that makes it easier for me. And Chris thinks a lot about design and how things are set up. And that makes it easier for me to do big things like this. And like, I had to fight a little bit to get it through editorial, but it wasn't a tough fight. I just had to explain to them how it worked and how it worked with the page turns. And then once they saw the idea working, they were like, oh my God, this is right. Do this. So it was, I don't know that this could have happened anywhere aside from Boom, because of the support of editorial. I liked it. I'm glad people noticed it, because it was sort of definitely a team effort for us to do that.
I feel like that's the nice thing, though, because it's still so hard, despite social media and like reviews, to get direct feedback and understand what worked and didn't. So I'm also happy to hear people say that, because again, a lot of thought goes into this, and it's more like when, for me, without sounding like an egomaniac, but when someone dismisses your work, like they dismiss all the work you put into it and everything you thought about. And for me, it always becomes like, oh, well, that's a bummer, because even if you don't like one part of it, like, you just dismiss all this work that everyone did. And clearly here, like, everyone involved thought a lot about not only their individual role, but the product as a whole. And again, that's one of the things I like about comics. It's a team effort where everyone kind of adds something, and you're making one product, but everyone kind of brings something special to it. At least that's what I try to get with my collaborators, that we all have kind of equal footing and feel excited about what we're doing. And the biggest bummer to me as a writer, because I've done a lot of creator-owned stuff where I assemble a team and everyone works together, but I often hear people aren't happy with a certain element of the book, like they complain about lettering, the coloring, or the art, or something like that, and that's a bummer to me, because I want everyone to be happy with every part of it, because everyone works hard. You don't want someone to feel compromised or feel cheap. And also just a shout out Ed Dukeshire, our letterer, who did an awesome job. I do a lot of my own lettering, and holy crap, I would have cried to letter this book because there's so much dialogue. And I feel like he did a really great job with a lot of placement, a lot of just the back and forth nature, which I knew it was going to be a lot, but I feel like it's a talky book in the stuff. Like, I pared it down a lot. I mean, Chris, do you remember that first lettering pass where it was just like, oh, nothing is showing.
Oh, no.
Oh, I don't know if you saw some of the initial stuff, but I really kind of like, it was the longest script I've ever written by far, like just in general. Like, I was just like, oh, God, I hope this doesn't look like a wordy mess. But then I went back and read, like, Bendis Daredevil, and I was like, oh, forget it. This is nothing.
It could be Hickman Avengers. I mean, come on, you know?
But the lettering like, covering up all the nice art.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the bummer. But I feel like we did some very... There's a very large chunk of issue 2 that has no dialogue. That's just pure storytelling that Chris and Marissa did really, really awesome stuff with in issue 2. So I'm really excited for people to see that and hopefully get there. Anyone who complained... I feel like I only saw one or two people who was like, there's so much talking in this. But even in the second half of the book, I feel like one of the reasons I'm so happy with again, the art side of this book is it's really... important to know that your collaborators can do their jobs when you just keep word off page, because you need to sell it all with expression, you need to sell it with color and get everything across. And I feel like we're really fortunate here. So good job, guys. High fives, digital high fives.
Yay!
I'm high fiving my phone on the screen.
That might be a nice ending point there. Dave, you had any other questions?
No, we covered pretty much everything. I made sure to definitely mention that bit of coloring on the last page, because that definitely struck me. Made me go back and read it again to make sure I was getting that, you know, making sure I was actually getting that. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I had that in my notes too.
I feel like that was a just last thing to say. I think that was like kind of, we knew that was going to be like the anchor for the first issue. Chris, I think that was your idea too, to do the two splash pages, open and close.
No, yours.
Well, I can't, I can't remember what we started talking about, but that really became important to me, that you could look at the first page and look at the last page and get a sense of what's changed. And I think it worked for me. So
cool.
So stone cold silence.
No one wants to talk over anyone else.
That's my job.
The light on this show. That's what it is. You know.
Well, I definitely want to
mishmash, right?
I definitely want to thank you all for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you. And like I said, it's nice to be able to talk with everyone to get everyone's perspective.
Let people know where they can find each of you individually on social media.
Yeah. Someone who's not me, start. Please.
You start.
Go ahead. No, you go.
Canadian. Ugh. I'm at Marissa Draws on Twitter, so that's MarissaDraws. Mm-hmm. Or you can just Google Marissa Louise. Anything that isn't arrest records is probably me.
Ah! Oh, and one other thing, if you could add, we have a co-host who couldn't be here tonight, but he wanted to ask about con schedules. So,
oh, yeah, that's a good one. We were talking about it, Liv.
I am doing, let's see, I'll be at Heroes. I'll be walking around at Heroes.
Yeah.
And that's
He'll be at Heroes.
And then I'm pretty easy to spot. I stand out in a crowd. So if you see someone that kind of looks like me, it'll probably be me. And then, let's see, I'll be doing Rose City. I have my schedule here. Let's see. I've got Rose City, probably Geek Girl Con. I lit Miss Van Calf, Heroes, and there's one more in October I'm doing.
Where is Geek Girls Con?
Geek Girl is in Seattle.
Okay.
That's probably Rose City. Okay,
Marissa has the biggest schedule.
Huh?
I think Marissa has the biggest schedule of all of us.
I'm a busy girl.
Chris, go.
Okay, so with the great stardom that comes from doing Broken World, I just got invited today to the Edmonton Expo, which is a sort of a sister one to the Calgary Expo. So I'll be there in September. I'm going to the signing on the weekend, this weekend with Frank. I might be in San Diego. I don't know for sure. That's sort of up in the air. And I'll just be walking around, so I don't have a table for that one. Other than that, I don't have too much. I've kind of had to settle down a little bit going to those, and we'll see how the next years come up. But, yeah, so that's basically it for me.
What's your Twitter handle, Chris?
Everything pretty much is all versus robots. VSROBOTS. And it's a totally dumb long story, so there's not really much to say, but about that name. But other than it was short and whatever. So anything you do versus robots for anything, I should pretty much come up with it. Because if you go Chris Peterson, on Google, you'll end up with either seeing a bunch of graphic designers, illustrators, more
go on
serial colors, and what else is there? I think there is another Chris Peterson in Edmonton that he does what do you call it now? I'm sorry if I use the wrong term, but he does a drag show, and everyone always thought it was me all the time because I lived in Edmonton for a while, so. So maybe with that guy. So there's different things.
so much drama.
So versus robots is probably the easiest way to do that, and it's for everything. .com and Twitter and Facebook and yeah.
And cool. I am Frank, and I am my Twitter handle is Atlas Incognita, which is I'm realizing such a bad idea now, but it's @AtlasInCognita. It was actually my like self-publishing brand, like when I was self-publishing comics, so it's stuck by me. But I will be at many, many cons. I have a lot of stuff, including Broken World debuting, that I really want to be pushing. I'll be at the signing on Saturday with Chris and Annapolis. I will probably be at Special Edition on Sunday.
Yay!
Then I will be at San Diego the whole weekend. I'll be at Baltimore. I will be at New York. I will be at Eternal Con. I will be at Heroes Con. So I think the schedule is actually going to go Eternals Con, Heroes Con, San Diego, Baltimore, New York, and hopefully that will be everything I do con-wise. But yeah, I like to go to cons. I like to meet people. So clearly, if you're ever at one, come hang out. I'm normally just sitting there staring at the space. I'm normally staring at someone more famous than me.
I'll be looking for you on Sunday. I'll make sure to be on the lookout. Will you be in Artist Alley somewhere?
I will either be at Steve Orlando of Midnighter Fame's table or okay. Matt Rosenberg of We Can Never Go Home's table.
Gotcha.
So I was supposed to table with one of them. What's that?
Do you have a table at Heroes?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I'll probably hang out at your table for a little bit then.
Nice. I will be with colorist Lauren Affey. So. Mm-hmm. And I think we might be seeing this to my friend from across the pond, Christian Ward, as well, who's an awesome human and great artist. So,
cool.
So Heroes is going to be a fun show. I'm really looking forward to it.
Now I'm more bummed that I'm not making it to Heroes Con this year.
I hear it's a really fun con. It's my first year.
I went last year for the first time, and it was great. I actually sat in on a panel that that Frank was on. I think it was a Breaking In Comics panel with this Frank. I know it was Frank and Van Jensen.
Oh, no way. Yeah, that was a really fun panel.
Yeah.
Like Matt Kent and stuff like that. There were
Matt Kent and someone else I'm forgetting.
I learned so much about other people on that panel. I was like very, very astounded. The first year, I guess now I'm making this go on forever. The first year I went to Heroes, I drove down with my buddy Matt Rosenberg, and we both had day jobs at that point, so we left at like 10 p.m. Thursday night and got in at like 8 a.m. Friday and then went right to the con without sleeping, and I fell asleep on the table. So anyone who came up to me that year to try to hang out, I apologize. I was going to keep drooling on myself, but I've cleaned up my act since then.
We will have a representative there. Of course, the host that isn't here tonight, Roddy, he will be there. And now the more we talk about it, the more I kind of want to try to make the drive. It's more a financial thing now because got to buy new tires and some other stuff. So
tires are expensive.
Got to be responsible. unfortunately. And yeah. I think our other host, Doug, is back on. Can you hear me?
Doug, welcome back.
Can you hear me?
Yes. We hear you.
Doug had to go.
All right, I had to pull out the Chromebook. My computer decided it had no hard drive.
Oh, no.
I was going to say, did you take a nap because of the dulcet tones of my voice? The sweet bassy notes just put you right out.
It's like a sweet lullaby. I wanted to ask a question towards the end of the story, and I'm glad you guys are still here. I was afraid you'd be gone. And of course, you probably talked about this while I was gone, but who knows. Towards the end of the issue, there's a bomb that goes off on the space elevator. And do we infer that the people who were going up are fine, or is this something that we will explore as the series goes on?
That will be explored. It was okay. Kind of purposely ambiguous at this point, but that's a very sharp question. Yeah.
Good. I want to make sure I didn't miss something there.
The one thing I can say, because it is in the art, you see that the carriage seems to have escaped the explosion as it's chasing it up, but we will definitely explore more of that in the next few issues.
Yes, but if you look at the science of space elevators, then you know that once you lose one of the anchors.
Well, as we said, this book is stoutly anti-science. So.
I brought it up with editorial, and this is just the way it is. So, yeah.
I mean, the real power behind the space elevators is love. So,
that's all you need.
Yeah, that's what Elon Musk told me when I called him.
All right.
So, well, thank you so much for having us, guys.
Yes, you're definitely more than welcome to leave now. I'm sure you all are very busy. We'll just spend the next portion of the show just talking about the books that came out this week and whatever news dropped, that sort of thing.
Yeah, we won't talk about you behind your backs until next week when we know that you're long gone.
All right, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you for joining us. Thank you all for joining us.
And make sure to go to your local comic book store or digital store of choice and pick up Book and World number one.
There it is.
Huzzah. Applause one more time. Let's do it.
No problem.
All right, well, I'm off to break into my apartment, so everyone have a good night.
Good luck. Good and if, luck. If you need a lawyer, you can message me back.
Good to know. Consider yourself on retainer.
You got it.
Have a good night, Chris.
Have a good night. Oh, Frank is still with us. Oh, no, there we go.
There you go.
We're back to the core group of the Comic Book Chronicles.
That was fun.
Yeah, that was good.
Yes, yes.
That was good. That was good. That was good to hear them. You know what's funny is that it reminded me of a conversation I had with Greg Pak about how, you know, years after he did the Planet Hulk arc in The Incredible Hulk, he hadn't met Carlo Pagulayan yet, you know, a Filipino artist based in the Philippines. You know, that entire time, they just communicated electronically, and they sent scripts and drafts and images back and forth, and they hadn't met until years after the story had been published and, you know, met at a New York Comic Con. So, you know, to hear them say, well, you know, this may be the first time that they're actually, you know, seeing each other face-to-face, sort of.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you with a whole bunch of noise there.
No, it's all right. It's all good.
Yeah, that's kind of the way the comic industry works.
Yeah, it's global, so you know they're all over the world, and you know, with the internet and our capabilities now, you know, it makes it a lot easier to produce comics using talent from around the world.
Let me do my quick plugs that I skipped over at the beginning of the show.
Well, I'm glad we did, because look at we spent. All right, Tim, you were right. I have to admit, before we start, you were right. We were going to be talking for a long time.
That's kind of how these things end up going.
Yeah,
getting a nice flow, especially if you get a nice flow. You guys. Props to both of you. You both had great points to bring up and questions.
Well, it helps that I actually read it. So
I read it twice.
Well, yeah, I read it twice. I read it electronically and in the hard copy.
Mostly because I read it a couple weeks ago and then had to refresh the memory again. But yes, go to theclicknation.com where you can read my review of Broken World number one. And also go to popculturenetwork.com. Follow the Twitter account at CBCron. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Subscribe on YouTube, iTunes, and Stitcher Radio. Search for The Click Nation. We are a part of the Comic Related and Code Slither Podcasting Networks. Go to their respective websites, comicrelated.com and codeslitherpodcast.com. Use the hashtags CBCron or Comic Book Chronicles on your favorite social media websites, and we will see those messages, and you may get your message, tweet, read on the show. And remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure to give us some feedback. You can send emails to theclicknation.com@gmail.com. I feel so weird reading the email address. Not even sure that sounds right. Yeah, theclicknation@gmail.com. Send us feedback. If you like to hear us talk to different creators, let us know, and we'll try to get more on the show.
And if you're a creator listening, we would be happy to have you on.
Yes. I'm getting more requests from creators to read their stuff.
Yes, please send us autographed copies of your books. Please make them out to eBay. That's my username. And we'd love to take a look at them.
All right, going to very quickly run through the news because we're already about an hour left on our at least planned time frame. Seamus is going to be Rocksteady in Ninja Turtles 2. I think we talked about that last week. Stephen Amell may step into the ring at SummerSlam.
Oh my
take
goodness.
On Stardust. That'll be interesting. That'll be maybe the only time Dirk gets to see the Arrow.
Yeah, well, you know, I plan on actually, I was thinking about it the other day. Flash is now hitting the digital outlets, so I can actually watch the Flash season. So what I'll probably do is grab Arrow last season where he made an appearance and then just go forward and start crossing over between the two of them. So that way I can get caught up on Flash that I want to, and then I'll probably just go ahead and watch Arrow from the season and see what happens.
Okay. Dwayne The Rock Johnson to star in Big Trouble in Little China remake.
Roddy has a little note here.
I haven't seen the original, so this really means nothing to me.
Oh, no.
What?
Yep.
You're off my Christmas card list.
Oh,
never
no.
Seen it. Was the Roddy Cat note?
Let me tell you what old Jack Burton is cooking. That's what Roddy left.
All right. Any other big news stories we have to punch?
Let's see. Avengers Assemble and Ultimate Spider-Man are coming back with different renaming. Miss Marvel is going to make her debut in Avengers Assemble, I think.
Cool.
Wicked and Divine option for TV. Kang Conqueror is apparently owned by Fox, so Marvel/Disney can't use him.
Oh.
That's actually a bummer. He would have made a good villain.
Yep.
Yeah, I like him.
Yeah. Yep. I think Marvel or Disney or whoever should just start making like exact copies of these people and just like give them a different name. Like come up with another time traveling villain.
This is Bang. instead of Kang, he's
or he's Dimortis instead of Immortus.
He's got a green face and purple body instead of a purple face and green body.
I love it. You know, Sam Jackson actually revealed that he's not in Captain America: Civil War, but he's put it out there in interviews that he wants his Marvel contract extended past, I guess, the last two remaining appearances he has on his contract. So, you know, I'm kind of surprised to not have a Nick Fury appearance in Captain America: Civil War, but you know,
there's enough going on.
Yeah, and you know what? There's still time to always have him film either a stinger or an insert, you know, like a reshoot scene. So we never know.
This is interesting. I haven't heard this. There's a rumor of Cloak and Dagger, Miss Marvel, and Hulk TV shows in development, according to IGN. I have to read that article later.
Wow.
Let's see. That's the TV movie news. Now the actual comic news.
Oh, real quick, James Gunn confirms an appearance of Star-Lord's father in Guardians 2. So wanted to just drop that before we moved on.
I guess the big news would be the all-new, all-different Marvel teaser images.
Yes.
Images, plural, that came out today. That was kind of out of nowhere. I've posted both of them on the site. Go to theclicknation.com, read articles. That's something that will be discussed more in detail as the weeks and months go on. Oh, I guess also on July 1st, all comic shots get a free 60-something page or 50-something page preview magazine for all new, all different Marvel Universe, given teases of the new number one issues.
I think it's the top 2,000 stores or something like that. So technically not all of them, but it should pretty much cover everybody.
Okay.
I mean, there'll be a few shops here and there that don't get it, but
I think it's going to come out digitally, but they said first available for comic shops because they want to reward the brick-and-mortar stores.
Right. Well, that's like with the free comic book day stuff. Mm-hmm. It finally hit last week, I think it was. So, you know, you had to go to your comic shop. You couldn't just say, oh, I'll read it online, you know, the next day or whatever. At least they waited, you know, a month, basically, before they put it out there for everyone else to grab.
Yeah, that's cool. So, yes, as we said, more on in the weeks to come. And I will quickly, speaking of press release, I just got some email from somebody about something.
That's a way to narrow it down.
That's right.
I saw the notification on the iPad. Okay, so audible.com free 30-day trial. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/coldslitterpodcast. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. For you, the listeners of the Comic Book Chronicles, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. You can get, science fiction. There is Andromeda Strain by Michael Crichton, Jurassic Park 25th Anniversary Edition by Michael Crichton, and Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/coldslitterpodcast. Again, that's audibletrial.com/coldslitterpodcast for your free audiobook. Oh, and there's also audibletrial.com/comicbookchronicles.
There you go.
Secret Wars number 3?
Yeah, did you read it?
Let's do it. Listen, I didn't type in anything into my sheet. I read pretty much almost everything.
That could be tested. We could test you on that.
I kid.
That's why we have you on the show.
Little bit of
you have you've got that nice train ride to get your
exactly.
reading.
Exactly.
I enjoy Secret Wars number 3 almost as much as number 2. We got a lot of information here.
Yeah, I was about to say the story is definitely being developed in this issue, and I think it's gotten a lot more interesting and intriguing as it's gone along. You know, seeing what we find out is there are people that do remember. There's a certain select group of people that do remember, and I mean that's been talked about before, but now, you know, we're starting to see what happened to the people who escaped in the Secret Wars inspired ships, both sets, and we see how that's going to affect things going forward.
And we get some more details from Sheriff Strange and Doom and whatever title Susan Storm has. I can't think of it right now.
Yeah, they did a little bit more of explaining where everybody kind of fits in this patchwork universe and the roles that everybody has to play. I felt a little more. One of my biggest problems with Secret Wars over the past couple of months has been who knows and who doesn't know, and how there really didn't seem to be any rules, you know, about who remembers the past and who doesn't. And this did a little bit more of trying to lay out at least a groundwork that you can kind of build from and go back through and say, okay, this is why these people remember and this is why these people don't. I'm still waiting for my old man Logan explanation, but otherwise, though, I'm starting to feel a little more at ease with the rules of the new world. I also like the fact that Dr. Doom has the face of Jason Voorhees from Part 7. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah. That's funny.
And we caught back up with the Cabal. That's a nice tease to hopefully it'll be a nice action sequence in issue 4. I'm mad that Maximus still has both of his hands. Because if you read Inhuman,
that's right.
lost his hands.
Well, I did not read Inhumans, so doesn't matter.
It's so, you know what's funny about that, Doug? You know what made me think of the first Secret Wars and what Doom actually did first? Do you remember that?
I have not read it in so long.
When he obtained the Beyonder's power, what did he do first? His very first act.
Did he fix himself?
Correct.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a nice little twist on that, where he, you know, where Doom is, you know, spoiler alert, is really good at playing God, but can't fix himself in this one. So that's pretty, you know, that was kind of a cool little twist.
He comes across as a sympathetic character.
It's like, yeah, he really does. He's very likable as a leader.
In his mind, he did the best under the circumstances he was under.
Well, and also considering that he didn't cause this, you know, because generally it's he's trying to take over the world, he's trying to control the world, and blah, 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 blah. Here in this one, the world is falling apart, and he does his best to save it as he can.
Yeah, save it the best he can.
Yeah.
Right.
So, who knows if he'll continue being the gray, like, staying in the gray area, but just have to keep being the sea.
Or it's all been a sham for Susan.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, he didn't.
I'm going to say, is Doom taking Namor's place as someone pining over Sue Storm now?
You know what? It's funny that you mentioned that. That thought crossed my mind. Like, you know, when did Vic, you know, kind of have the hots for Suzy Q there, you know?
I'm not a
I don't remember reading that.
I'll take your word for it.
I'm just kind of surprised there's this much focus on Dr. Doom and the Fantastic Four, considering now Marvel will not allow any of those characters to get any sort of attention because they don't own the movie rights and blah, 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 blah.
We saw those teaser images today. There were no mutants in at least the first image until they released the second image.
The all-new Marvel?
Yes, all new everything.
I didn't see these images. Now I'm going to have to spoil myself.
Yeah. You can check them later. All right, so that was Secret Wars number 3. Let's go to... I want to hear some thoughts on Action Comics 41.
Oh.
Because I haven't read it yet.
I'm a little bit behind on Superman, so I didn't understand the premise of the issue, or at least the, you know, like how we get from... And I'm still kind of confused as to how we have Superman in armor and looking all super heroic in Justice League 41, and we have this is what's going on in Superman and Action Comics.
Well, it's because they don't take place concurrently.
Oh, is that what it is?
How exactly they play out, I'm not 100% sure, but I don't know. Part of it is doing Convergence and everything having to go along with it. Mm-hmm. One of the big changes at DC was less of an editorial mandate for continuity between all the different titles. Mm-hmm. So that Action Comics, you know, this truth storyline could play out, and at the same time you can have Bruce Wayne as Batman and powered up Kal-El in Justice League, and you don't have to necessarily explain, you know, at some point 6 months down the line, Superman could go, oh, wow, last week I didn't have my powers, that was so weird. And, you know, that could be the end of it right there, you know?
Right.
Part of the big change was allowing creators to just tell the stories they want to tell and then worry about the continuity later. So that could just be the product of that. But
okay.
I believe his loss of powers comes from the fact that he discovered he had the new power, the sunburst power,
okay,
where he shoots all the energy out of all his cells, basically, all the stored up sun solar power. And once he shoots all that energy out, he's drained.
Right.
He slowly recharges, and I don't know if this is part of the recharging process or if it's that he's recharging, but he's not recharging to the same full power because he had, you know, 23, 25 years of charging up before he ever used his powers in any major way.
Right.
Now he's emptying everything out, so is it going to take 20 years for him to build up the full power again, you know, type of thing? Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure exactly how that plays out, but that's the impression that I get.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, I mean, you know, this was an interesting issue to read. Like I said, coming really cold into the story and not understanding what, you know, what the premise is really. I mean, I understood the whole sunburst power and, you know, and how that might play, but I don't recall when exactly his secret identity being compromised. When did that happen?
You don't see that. There is a time skip that happened.
Oh, okay.
Because in right before Convergence happened, Lois Lane figured out that Clark Kent was Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And then Convergence happens, and then we come out of Convergence, and at some point in the past, couple weeks or month or whatever, right, she's published the story exposing who he is. Because Clark and Lois really didn't have much of a relationship in this universe.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as she finds out his identity, why wouldn't she publish the story? It's the greatest story of her life, you know? So there was nothing holding her back this time around, and at some random point it just happened, and now we're just dealing with the fallout of it.
I understand. All right. Well, like
I
said...
I do like the idea that he's not just going to grab a planet and smash it into another planet. Like, there are limits on what he has now, and it's not just the fact that he's not as powerful, but the fact that he was that powerful, and now he's not.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes that adjustment period, and it takes a little bit of, getting punched in the face a couple times and realizing he can't fight the same way he used to before, and he can't fly like he used to before, and he can't hear everything like he used to before, and how he's got to deal with the loss of that ability.
I gotcha.
This whole arc seems interesting enough to get me to go back to reading the Superman family of books now.
Yeah, I just wonder how much they're going to build the team around him. You know, in the 90s when they made the big push for more realistic Superman stories, one of the things that they did was build up his supporting cast. So you saw a lot more of Jimmy, and you saw a lot more of the people working at the Daily Planet and Perry White and his life, and you know, all of that stuff built the world he was in. And I'm wondering how much they're going to do on this as they're pushing for him being more, I don't want to say more human, but being less of the, you know, all-powerful, right, God-type character that he's been.
Right. I actually got the Darwin Cook variant cover.
The Joker variant?
Mm-hmm. I'm inclined to agree with you, Doug. I like the story. Like I'm glad that you explained it to me. I literally walked in very, very cold to the story, and I was kind of taken aback just for a couple minutes, you know, trying to get a handle on where we are. I think even a new reader coming in would be kind of confused and would take.
Well, you got an 8-page preview in the free Comic Book Day offering.
Oh, I have to flip. I actually didn't get that one, so.
Well, go online right now. It's available at Comixology.
I have to flip through it, yeah.
Get it for free.
That's right.
All right. Anyone want to throw a book out?
Let's see.
Well, just real quickly, let me... did anybody else read Green Lantern?
I did.
Oh,
I
really?
Did read Green Lantern. Yeah, I flipped through it.
I'm amazed.
Because I wanted to find out what the heck is that image, that cover image about.
Yeah, and if you read the 8-page preview...
I did not.
Well,
I have no idea what the hell is going on. But then I figured out that Green Lantern has become Gambit with pouches.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by the idea that he doesn't have control over the ring like he did before. He built this gauntlet that he powered up. But I'm not, like, it doesn't feel like Hal Jordan to me as I'm reading
not
the comic.
Not at all. I agree with you on
that. Is that a good thing?
No.
I was uncomfortable with the read. I wasn't sure what kind of take they were looking for, you know, in terms of how they were going to portray Hal Jordan. Are they trying to make him like a 90s badass again?
I don't know.
Right? You weren't even sure how to answer that, and that's what's disconcerting. Because you definitely got that feel, especially when you saw the full reveal of the costume when he does the whole flourish and he's wearing a trench coat.
Yeah, and the long hair, the trench coat, the
pouches,
the utility belt, whatever.
Yes. But yet, I want to say how much of a badass cover that is.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's intriguing, the idea that he's left the core, that he's out on his own, but he still has that power to fall back on. Mm-hmm. And there's a reveal at the end of this. Where I won't spoil it, but there's a reason why there's no backup and there's no one coming after him for what he's doing. So he is very much out on his own. But I don't know. I got done reading it, and I just couldn't help shaking the feeling that this seems so out of character with 40, 50 years of Hal Jordan's history. It's kind of like when they did the Parallax thing, and they had to go back and retcon it in order to make it make sense.
Right.
By having Parallax being some sort of alien being that took over his mind, mm-hmm. as opposed to him just freaking out one day. Mm-hmm. And yet here they're kind of doing it again, and I'm just not sure. It just doesn't feel like Hal Jordan, and I'm not buying it, you know?
They lost me. They lost me with the costume reveal. That's why you can hear it when I'm poking so much fun at it. They lost me. You know, they had me reading this with some interest, and, you know, Hal Jordan is a hooded figure, you know, just as he is on the cover, but without the domino mask. When we first meet him in the book, but then when they do the costume reveal, they lose me. I can't help but start laughing, at the imagery. So, you know, everything after that, I just found very hard to take in and very hard to try to comprehend. To be perfectly honest, I don't know if I'm even with the last page cliffhanger, I don't know if I want to read the next issue.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I'll probably, as I cut open the boxes on Tuesday and start unpacking all the comics for the week, I'll probably flip through it. But it's going to be one of those things where unless something really catches me over the next 2 or 3 months, it'll just be something that I occasionally thumb through just to get an idea of what's going on in the book, but I probably won't be following it.
Hmm. And you were reading Green Lantern before the Convergence, right? Because I know you were into the Godhead stuff.
Yeah, I mean, technically I've been reading it since 90 when I really started spending all the money I had on comics in high school, you know? So, yeah.
I mean, I've been reading Green Lantern on and off, like really on and off for a long time, but, you know, this definitely was one of the weirder takes on the Hal Jordan character, at least. So.
And it very well could be one of those things that lasts, like, 4 months, 5 months, and then they go, okay, bad idea, wrap it up.
Yeah.
Put out
even
more.
Even the subtitle on the cover. Even the subtitle on the cover, Renegade. It's so 90s.
You know, he does kind of look like Lorenzo Lamas in this book.
Oh, no! He said Lorenzo Lamas. Oh, no!
There's your one Lorenzo Lamas reference for the evening.
That was the title of that TV show, right? Oh,
yeah,
my God! That's funny.
He rode a motorcycle and he wrestled crocodiles.
Yes! Oh, my God. That's what that's where they got the inspiration for that Nomad redo. Remember that? Nomad?
Yes.
Well, since we're in the DC universe, I guess they're not calling it New 52 because I noticed conspicuously that the New 52 is no longer in the
right.
the cover.
They announced that that was over.
Right. So, well, you know, I don't pay attention to DC's announcements.
What did I miss?
New 52 is over.
Oh, yeah.
Right. It's no longer in the in the cover logo.
In the masthead. Yeah.
So I'm jumping to Justice League number 41. Did anyone else read that?
Yes.
So this go ahead.
I was just going to say, this one I actually thoroughly enjoyed.
Okay. So this one was a little easier to understand, at least on my end, because it involved, familiar-looking characters. It didn't seem like we had gone too far from where we left off pre-Convergence. In terms mm-hmm. of, you know, the status quo, in terms right. of Lex Luthor being on the Justice League, in terms of the costumes and the powers and the team, the heroes that compose the Justice League, right?
Right. Power Ring still part of the team.
Exactly. Thanks for reminding me. I like the introduction of Scott Free, who is otherwise known as Mr. Miracle. I'm not spoiling anything with that, am I? If I am,
No, you're fine. Damn bell. No, you're fine.
So, you know, he is introduced in this book, and we find out how how best to put it. I guess it's a first strike on behalf of who is this character at the end? To refresh my memory.
The character at the end.
Oh, actually, no, it's the Dark Side War, but there's a character at the end who's revealed. It's kind of a cliffhanger.
Oh, the Anti-Monitor.
Yes, thank you very much. I wanted to say that, but I didn't want to completely goof.
Right. Well, the Anti-Monitor is the one who actually started the original Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Right.
And he was the one trying to collapse the entire universe so that he could rebuild it the way that he saw fit. Mm-hmm. And then he would be, if you want to, you know, throw out a a parallel. He would be the Doom of the new Secret Wars world.
Exactly. How very Doom. How very Doom.
And that was basically the original concept between Crisis on Infinite Earths. Well, now, because of Convergence, we find out that Crisis didn't happen or didn't collapse towards the end of the series and get reborn as the new DC universe of 85 or 86, whatever it was. So somehow it's led him to this, where he's making the reemergence now. And this is, yeah, his first, apparently there's some sort of ongoing squabble between him and Darkseid that we don't really know about. We've just heard it referenced a couple times in the past, and now it's starting to come out full steam.
Okay. And I also wanted to mention that we got our first look at the half-page ad for Twix with Nick Lachey. I wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, the funny thing is that everybody was talking about how they were going to have these half-page ads and how weird that was going to be and whatever. But they did it in such a way, much like the digital comics that they do, where because it's a half page, when you read it digitally, they just take the two halves and stack them together, and it makes a regular full page. So when you're reading it through Comixology or Comix Plus or any of your, Amazon bookstore, Nook bookstore, whatever, the ad is gone, and it looks just like any other comic book page. You don't even realize you're looking at two half pages squashed together.
That's funny.
So it's a bonus ad for all the people who buy print.
Right.
I want to rain praise down on the artist, Jason Babak, because everything just looks awesome.
It's really sharp, right?
Yeah.
And it's extra pages, right?
Yes. I think it was, wasn't it a $4.99? Or did they give it to you for free? Yeah.
$4.99.
Yeah, they wouldn't give you extra pages for free. What am I thinking?
Can I reveal something that is kind of funny looking back in retrospect? So since I knew the New Genesis and Apocalypse people were from another planet or dimension or whatever it is, and Mr. Miracle, as we see him here, I always thought that was his actual skin and not a costume he was wearing.
Oh, really?
I always thought he was just like a... I thought everyone was just like funky, weird-looking quasi-human characters and not actually like wearing costumes and whatnot.
Well, then we know you didn't read the old Jack Kirby stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because the original Mr. Miracle was actually a magician, and when Scott Free escaped from Apocalypse and landed on Earth, he became friends with the magician, and the magician died, and he took over that guy's gimmick. So, go back and read your 70s Jack Kirby comics. Come on.
Yes, you caught me.
I caught you not reading comics from before you were born.
Exactly.
I liked the New Gods. I liked Darkseid. I liked the way all of that played out. The artwork was beautiful. The story was well done. I mean, just everything about it. And it felt like there was no dysfunction in the team. Like, that's not the point of this particular storyline. So it had that kind of classic Justice League feel to it, where you have all the heroes. They're at their best. They're getting ready for this big battle, and just everything looked neat and clean and well done, and throwback to those, stories from pre-Crisis on Infinite Earths, where you have a good team firing on all cylinders. So I really enjoyed this book.
Minus the Superman Lex tension.
Well, yeah, but that was a Lex thing. That's not really a team thing.
Right. Okay.
But anyway.
Star Wars number 6.
And just to throw it out there, Star Wars 6 and Darth Vader 6.
Yeah, let's talk about them together, really.
Because they do converge. They have a convergence, we could say.
Oh, boom, boom.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to the Darth Vader yet.
Well, they both kind of end on the same in the same spot.
Yeah, I read Star Wars, so I can guess where it
Yeah, ends. You get a little bit more in Darth Vader than you get here in Star Wars, which of course makes sense. Right. But I just love the fact that you finally see the two of them come together. You see the same scenes basically in both books this week.
Cool.
So what did you think about Star Wars 6?
Boba Fett. Who doesn't like Boba Fett?
And how they got around the problem of Boba Fett and Luke meeting in, I guess it was Return of the Jedi, or at right. least fighting each other there and not having recognize one another, or Luke recognizing him, I should say.
Right. And also, it was weird. I guess I'm not a big enough Star Wars nerd, but there's a box with the Interlac writing on it, or whatever they call that language, that written language, and it's like they kept focusing on that box and the writing that was on it. Mm-hmm. And I don't read and write Star Wars fictional language.
Supposed to recognize that?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, you can download. Oh yeah, definitely. Oh. It's kind of like Klingon in Star Trek. There are people that know that whole language.
So what does it say?
I don't know. I was going to try to look it up before the show, and I didn't get a chance.
Wait, doesn't it say at the end? Oh, no, it doesn't. It says what's on
the book. It says what's on the book.
Right, exactly.
Right. So I'm sure maybe someone out there on Twitter can tell us what it says on the book. But it was funny to me because it kept focusing on that box and the writing that was on it. And I'm like, I have absolutely no idea what that's supposed to be saying. And I guess I probably should know. But, yeah, that was kind of fun. But I... Yeah. The one thing that really, I don't know, stuck out to me, I guess, on this one is the fact that we see Luke pushing himself more towards being a Jedi. Like, we know in Empire, which obviously comes after the series, is when he says, you know, he's really got to go out and develop those skills. Like, he knows his skills aren't good enough. And this book does a good job of setting up where he's in a confrontation, and he knows he has the power, but he tries to use it, and he's just really clumsy and awkward.
He's basically just improvising as he goes along, and you know, it's almost through sheer dumb luck that he's able to make it through this alive, and that's, I think, the point of the story.
Right. So it did a good job in setting that up and giving you that that point of reference where later in Empire, you know why he's driven a little bit more. To why he needs to train and he's got to learn all that, because here we see him, he almost loses, you know? So he knows he's got some sort of skill, but he just doesn't really know how to use it yet. And I thought that was a good job of adding that extra, you know, kind of nerdish background to the character that we see later on.
So are we not going to talk about the big reveal in this book?
I mean, we can mention it. We spoil other things on here.
No, I just wanted to... You know, I was about to say, we don't have to spoil it because it's not completely necessary to talk about because it doesn't really... you know, it's a plot twist and it's part of the story, but it's not like Broken World where we actually have to kind of explain it to understand what the book is about, you know? You know, whereas in this... whereas in Star Wars, you know, there is a big reveal. Apparently it is canon and... You know, it definitely affects one of the fan favorite characters and provides a lot more depth to that character's story.
You know, it's funny because you said that, and I completely forgotten what you were talking about because
no.
I was focused so much on Luke and Vader that it took me a minute to realize what you were referring to. But then, now that you mention it, I'm like, oh yeah, there is that other thing.
Yeah, that did happen. I will say, Aaron does a good job of dancing through the continuity plot holes that could present themselves.
I mean, it's been out everywhere. I mean, I think we're pretty safe talking about it. Just go ahead and ring the bell.
Okay, ring the bell.
And we see Han Solo's wife appears. She's apparently the one that's been tracking them for the last couple issues, mm-hmm. trying to find out where Han is, and with a ship that looks remarkably similar to the Millennium Falcon.
I thought it was at first, because of course I totally forgot that they didn't fly that ship. Did they fly that ship to this hidden planet on
and I think so.
Yeah, I believe so.
I can't remember if they flew like some Imperial ship or not.
Oh, you may be right on that one.
Because then they had like some fake codes they were trying to use, and
it might have been an A-wing. Yeah.
It was about to work, and then Han started
freaking out.
You're right. Tim's right. Good memory.
Yes.
For once.
Yeah, for once. But. Yeah, so of course we'll have to keep reading to see.
Yeah, because originally I thought that was a character from the expanded universe when they showed the character in the last issue, but then we get the reveal that you know who she is, and of course it throws a wrinkle in things. And this counts as canon. They said anything that happens, you know, from here on out is the official lore of the Star Wars universe. So, question is this a seed that they're throwing out there? that's going to come back in episode 7 that we're going to get this year, or is this just one of those things where they said, hey, you can play around with this as long as nothing sticks once Empire comes through? That's going to be the question.
Yeah, because there's episode 7, there's all the tie-in novels and more comics to come. It's going to be a busy, I guess, less than a year now away. Well, a little more than a year, because it comes out. Does it come out in December of this year or next year?
December of next year.
Okay.
Am I wrong?
Wait, it's December of 2016?
Now we're going to Google.
I'm pretty...
Well, if the trailer's out now, it's got to be soon, right? Or semi-soon. It might be this year. Am I right?
Could be.
If I have to wait a whole year, I'm going to start rioting or something.
No, December 18th, 2015, that is.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah,
this year.
Yeah, so...
We're living in the future.
So, yes, more Star Wars, The Force Awakens talks on future episodes of Comic Book Chronicles.
There you go.
All right, so then jumping over to Vader then real quick.
Yeah, we won't talk too much because Tim still hasn't read.
Oh, no, I'm about to spoil everything.
All right.
But again, the setup from last issue, I didn't really like the characters that we saw introduced in the last issue. And here we see that they don't take too much focus, which I was glad. I was afraid that it was going to become a big thing of those other those other bad guys that have been constructed. Yeah. And luckily they don't stick around for the whole thing. So I was happy that took care of itself. And we do see, like I said, we see that what happens at the end of Star Wars 6 also happens at the end of Darth Vader 6, except we get a little bit extra continuing on from what we saw in Star Wars, which of course makes sense to expand the story more in the book, actually titled after the character. But I really like the way it developed his character, the way you see the conflict within him, where he knows who his master is, and he knows, you know, what his place is within their relationship, but then at the same time, knowing that Luke is out there, Luke is his son, now gives him an opportunity, if there's, you know, two, if that's how the Sith works, you know, just one master, one apprentice, then it gives him the opportunity, if he can, you know, bring in his son, as we see in later movies, you know, here we're seeing the seeds planted of him rebelling against his emperor, that he could bring in his son, and he could be the master, his son would be the apprentice, and, you know, the idea that even as a father, as he reflects back on, you know, his life with Padme and everything, that there is still a bit of that father within him, even as dark and twisted as he's become. There's still that idea of, hey, I could rebuild this relationship with my son. It's for evil, but it's still something that he feels that he could do.
Right. And you know what? I'd be very happy to have Sal LaRocca stay on this book for a long time.
Well, we know he's a quick artist, so...
You know, I'd be very happy to just have him stay on.
Matter if Marvel wants him to stay on or not, or if he feels like staying on or not, too.
Because this is some great, great stuff.
All New X-Men number 41, I guess, was the conclusion of All New X-Men, because the story will be picked up in Uncanny X-Men 600 that comes out sometime in the fall.
Right.
In October, I think.
Yeah.
Some ridiculousness. We finally deal with the Utopians.
Yeah. Even though it was taken care of very quickly, I didn't really mind it. I don't know, this issue kind of read nicely for me.
Okay.
What all did I like about it? I liked the dialogue, how witty the back and forth, like with Maria Hill and the X-Men, when she goes to them for help, and she's like, you know, she could just go, send a bunch of helicarriers and SHIELD agents to Utopia to start a war or a battle with whoever was there, but she'd rather not have another incident involving mutants. And maybe, you know, if they go there, they can resolve it peacefully, which of course doesn't happen because you have to have a fight take place. But I wish that, even though I don't mind the story concluding quickly in two issues, I kind of wish there were more issues just so we could see, like, how this group of mutants came to
be together.
Yeah, be together.
It was a pretty diverse and almost random, you know, no pun intended, since random's actually there. Diverse and random group.
Yeah, they hit up different eras of the X-Men. You have your sort of old-timers with new mutants with Karma and Madison Jeffries, who I had to Google to remember who he was.
Alpha Flight, yeah.
Who else was there? Boom Boom, or Boomer. They can't seem to decide what name she's going to go by. Who else was there? Random, as you said.
I forgot.
Yeah, the actual character Random. But yeah, so yeah, got back. It, you know, we're past all the controversy from the last issue, and it was kind of a straightforward X-Men story. Kind of wish 600 was Uncanny X-Men 600 was going to be sometime this summer, but hey, whatever.
But Marvel hates you.
That's right.
Oh, and I won't. Yeah, that's what it was. So, okay, so Uncanny X-Men 600, is that going to deal in some aspect of the original X-Men stuck in the past? Is it going to be some? Is there going to be resolution to that? Is what I'm wondering. Either here or in Secret Wars. I doubt Secret Wars because they're not a part of it. As far as, yes, the different characters of Cyclops, Jean Grey, yada, 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 appear in different domains and in different books and whatnot, but this original five from the taken from the past, placed in the future, how is that going to be resolved? And will it be resolved in any way? Probably not, is my guess.
Hmm.
I don't know. You know, in all honesty, I would, you know, I'd be happy if they went back, you know, into the past. And just
show them going back, at least.
Yeah. That's just me. All right, so let's see. What else we have?
Rapid reviews.
Are we at that point? Because there's a lot of stuff to rapid review.
It's 5 till 10, which is 5 till 11 your time. So
yeah. Let's cover some Secret Wars stuff. So let's do Extinction Agenda. I'll throw out the X stuff. Extinction Agenda and Years of Future Past. I actually liked Years of Future Past. There were some great character moments in here. And a great, well, first off, a great Art Adams cover, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. It's a great play on some of the X-Men history that's, you know, that's come to pass in, you know, in Art Adams' time doing covers. The story deals with the last mutant born before things change, and you know, I guess what I'm describing isn't necessarily completely spoilers. Because these are storylines that are adapted from storylines that are decades old at this point. And in this possible future, Senator Kelly, the author of the Mutant Registration Act, can become president. Now, wow, they got planes flying overhead?
Would you move to the airport?
What was that?
No, you all hear that? That's out my window.
Oh, wow.
Hey, so that must be pretty good.
Yes. So anyway, so the bottom line is, you know, his anti-mutant legislation, you know, he's helped push through anti-mutant legislation, and basically mutants have been basically sterilized, and there's now a region of Battleworld that has this particular reality in it. And it's kind of curious to see how, the Sentinels and Doom is sort of letting this stuff play out. Kind of going on what Dirt was saying before, like, what does Doom know? What is Doom letting kind of pass as God of this battle world? You know, I kind of found it interesting to think about that. But at the same time, the story is actually just very well done. It involves a lot of very familiar characters for anyone who is a fan of the X-Men. And you know that sort of leads my segues into my quickie review of Extinction Agenda. Now this is a little bit more recent. This refers to an event that's a little bit more recent. This involves a time when the X-Men were being hunted down by the people who populated Genosha, who basically made mutant slaves. And in the aftermath of the Extinction Agenda, the mutants basically took over Genosha and tried to normalize it, but this particular story shows what happens when this reality, or at least this what-if type story, is transported over to Battleworld, and how Doom sort of lets what's happening in here not spread. And what I'm referring to is that there's some disease, this anti-mutant disease is spreading, and Doom is basically saying, hey, I'm God of Battleworld, and you guys can't leave your particular realm
because you may spread this disease to other mutants in other areas and, you know, kind of cause a mass extinction. So he's basically saying, you know, you guys have to stay put, and there's friction caused by that. Again, this involves a lot of familiar twists on familiar characters in the X-Men universe. Of the two, I think Years of Future Past is far much better done. But if you're familiar enough with the Extinction Agenda storyline, I think you might enjoy it.
Which one is easier for someone who hasn't read an X-Men book in 20 years to pick up and get into?
Years of Future Past.
Yeah, okay. I didn't read Years of Future Past. I read Extinction Agenda. So I definitely agree with that. Extinction Agenda. I'm an X-Men reader, but I was kind of like, eh.
Yeah.
So, of course, I chose the wrong X-book to read this week. Great.
To throw out another eh in the Marvel Universe, Future Imperfect one. I tried reading this, and I got about three-fourths of the way through, and I'm just like, why am I reading this? Like, why do I care?
It was okay. Yeah. I didn't mind it because it is Peter David. I thought it was okay. It's Greg Land's art that kills it, as always.
His art actually didn't offend me that much.
Yeah, I didn't have any problem with the art. I was just sitting there, like, wondering at what point do I care about what's going on, and it just kind of struck me that at no point do I care about what's really going on in this book.
Well, I really like the reveal. You know, I like the fact that they twisted a little bit of your expectations as to when you were going to see the Maestro.
Sure.
I like that. I thought that was good. What I didn't like was the whole, I don't know if this character is from anywhere else, is Ruby Summer's character. You know, I thought she was kind of a throwaway. I like the fact that they kept the reveal for the Maestro very, very low key, and they kept it towards the end. I did like that. So that part of the story, you know, was well done in my opinion. But, you know, the character, our point of view character, this Ruby Summers, just didn't, you know, she seemed kind of like a throwaway. And I wasn't invested in her at all. I was waiting to see how they were going to reveal the Maestro. And so that part I liked. And the cliffhanger page was interesting because if anyone is a fan of the Future Imperfect miniseries, the two-issue miniseries, it's interesting to see other heroes alive. Because obviously the whole point of the Future Imperfect series is that he's the last remaining super. You know, he's the last remaining, you know, powered person. Everyone else died over time or in a nuclear blast.
Well, still, I'm probably not going to read issue two.
All right. I'm willing to give it a chance. I'm still not a fan of Greg Land.
Well, Greg Land called and he said he doesn't care for you much either.
That's all right. If I see, you know, I know who to punch in the face if I see him on the street, right?
Did anybody read Battle World at all?
Not yet.
Nay.
Nay. Okay, well, that answers that.
Nay.
Not that I don't want to, it's just...
Did anybody read Renew Your Vows?
You know, I have a copy of it sitting here, and because it came with this variant cover of the Secret Wars toy, so of course I grabbed one of those.
Right.
But no, I just I had to pick before the show started, do I read Star Wars stuff or do I read Spider-Man? And considering how much I've avoided Spider-Man since Superior went away, I just, you know, it's one of those things I'll get to this weekend, but I just didn't feel the need to do it right away here.
Right. I think you made the right choice. I had a tough time reading this because it definitely leads you down a path where you're not comfortable with the character. And, you know, maybe that's the whole point. You know, you're not comfortable with how the character is developing, and you know that this is kind of a what-if style story, but, you know, I found myself kind of uncomfortable reading this towards the end.
Because you just don't like Spider-Man? I mean, the way he is?
Exactly, or at least the way he's portrayed here, you know? So, you know, I thought that was interesting. I thought that, you know, that kind of brought out, you know, kind of like a different, you know, emotional side. So I give Slott a little bit of credit for that, but, you know.
Yeah.
This particular Secret Wars tie-in did not read as interesting or as fun as some of the other ones. And I'm going to give you a rapid review of Master of Kung Fu number 2. This issue read so much better than issue number 1. This made me flip back to issue number 1 and try to reread that to understand what was going on, because this issue makes so much sense. And just, this could have stood in as issue number 1, and I would be right there with the story. to be perfectly honest. You know, I cannot stress that how much this particular issue surprised me with how readable it was, with how accessible it was, even though you do absolutely need a little bit of an understanding of how of who at least the martial artists are in the Marvel Universe. But at the same time, you know, this is all, you know, a mishmash of characters thrown in due to the way Battleworld is constructed. But I think that this one, you know, this particular issue was so much easier to read and so much more accessible than the first one was. It, like I said, it actually enticed me to read the first one or reread the first one. And I'm still trying to make my way through the first one, you know, trying to do it on my way home. I was like, ah, I'm going to try to do this when I have more, you know, when I have more energy or something. Maybe I'll do it while I'm waiting online at special edition or something.
Mm.
You know, but I like this issue. Issue number two was by far, you know, a superior issue to issue number one.
All right.
Let's see. What else? Groot number one I thought was a fun little cute read.
Yeah, actually, my son really wanted to read this one. So I kind of flipped through it, and it looked much more kid-friendly than Rocket Raccoon's early issues were. So I let him read it. He really enjoyed it.
Did you see the DC reference?
The DC reference?
Yeah, there's a DC Comics reference in there.
Well, I have to go back and read it more closely then.
Okay.
I did enjoy Jeff Loveness's writing in the little three-part Amazing Spider-Man, Inhumans, All New Captain America special that came out a couple months ago. So I know he can, at least on the right-hand side, Groot should be entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this takes the place of the Rocket Raccoon book. So that book is over for the time being, and Groot is being published technically in its spot. So I liked how the book started with the two of them, you know, having a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And so then now it's Groot is getting a little more attention than Rocket Raccoon was. I thought that was kind of a clever way to play off the fact that in the publishing schedule, this is taking over his spot. I'm not sure for how long, but...
Right.
But it was a very funny story. And even though it's rated T for teen, you know, my son's 10, it was still fine for him. You know, there was no problem. I guess they just had to do that because some of the violence to it, but even the violence was still kind of Looney Tunes style.
Right.
And it was much more about the comedy of the team of Skrulls that he runs across than, you know, anything else. So,
would you happen to have more details on the planet's defenses? Yeah, but flip through it again, and you'll see the DC Comics reference.
Okay. Well, he snatched it out of my hand, took it back up to his room, so I'll have to...
Okay.
Now that he's asleep, I'll have to go dig up there while he's asleep and find it.
Gotcha. Well, Dirt, I know that you are a fan of the jerk-face portrayal of Superior Spider-Man, so as is the dog. And, you know, have you been reading Superior Iron Man at all?
I have not.
I think you might like it. I think you might like it because, you know, it's...
Well, part of what I liked about Superior Spider-Man was the fact that the villain was able to win.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me was part of the draw of it. Not so much that I just like dickhead characters, you know.
Gotcha. What's interesting about this is that I think they're cementing the fact that Inversion Tony is kind of here to stay for a while. You know, and, you know, Pepper did her level best to try to change him back, or at least
knock some sense into him.
No, yeah, I was gonna say not reboot him, but maybe install an earlier version. Let's put it that way. That's saying enough without completely spoiling, you know, the story. But she was basically trying to reboot him to an earlier version, and you know, she was unsuccessful. And it seems to me that the Inversion Tony Stark is here to stay for at least a little while longer. We'll see if he lasts through Secret Wars.
Hmm. All right.
What's left?
Let's see here. Oh, Bizarro.
Oh, yeah. I read that.
That was great.
That was pretty funny.
To me, this felt like if you read the Plastic Man series that came out maybe about 10 years ago from DC, this fits perfectly in that same vein. This is a very funny book. It's got the look of... you know, I'll go back to Looney Tunes because I think the artist on here may have done some of the Looney Tunes books, actually. But it's a very fun, very kid-friendly, mm-hmm. You know, happy-go-lucky look at the DC Universe, and with Bizarro being friends with Jimmy Olsen and basically Clark Kent, you know, Jimmy and Clark are talking, and he says something about how, well, people keep thinking Bizarro is you, and he's like, yeah, he's got to go. You got to get him out of town. Just he doesn't want people to associate Bizarro with him, so Bizarro and Jimmy are on a road trip, cross-country, road-tripping it, and it just makes a super fun, laid-back, pleasant-to-read, happy comic book, and it felt like that Saturday morning cartoon type of stuff that you always got with a good Scooby-Doo type villain, and you know, I just really enjoyed this. And again, this is another one that I read with my son. He loved it as well, so it works on multiple levels.
Interesting, interesting. But yeah, I enjoyed this. It was a fun read. It definitely was. I love the fact that, you know, you sort of start, just like Jimmy starts in this book, you sort of start thinking and speaking, or at least, you know, thinking inner monologues or thoughts as Bizarro, to try to kind of get into the mindset. So it's funny how it's almost catching as you read through the book.
Yeah, and all these people hate you. Yay. No, Bizarro, I mean, all these people love you. Oh, no. But yeah, it was fun. Good fun.
And yeah, and Colin, his Chupacabra.
Right, yes. Which makes absolutely no sense, which is perfect for the story.
Exactly. That's what was great about it, because I was trying to figure out, how does that come into the story? It's just from out of nowhere.
Yeah, because you go through, like, I don't know, the first third of the book, and they don't even mention him or do anything with him, and then suddenly it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, there's this thing, and then now it's part of the story.
Yeah, that's funny.
So,
I can't help but think of the Batman live TV show with Adam West when I see King Tut. Right?
Of course. Did you read Omega Man, anybody?
I did not get it round to reading Omega Man.
And that's the one I wanted to get to you the most.
Go for it.
You didn't read it? Yeah. It's on my weekend list. Batmite, I tried reading that. This is the other all-ages one. But this, I don't know. This one lost me after a little bit. It just didn't have the same fun to it that Bizarro did. This is also rated E for everyone, but I don't know. It just didn't feel as fun and innocent, I guess, mm-hmm. as Bizarro did. So maybe that's just because Batman is different.
Has anyone been reading Dave?
I think I'm an issue behind.
So this is the last issue of the limited of this series. I don't want to spoil anything, but you know, there's going to be a Dave 2 in your face September 2015. So it's not the last that we see of this character. You know, without spoiling too much, we have the climax of this particular story and the alien invasion that Dave is fighting off. So read this. It's very funny. Do not be frightened by a lot of crass, harsh language. That is plentiful in this. But do not let that distract from the fact that this is a very, very well-crafted story. And the art is well done as well. So overall, this is a great, this was a great fun read, without being tied down into a continuity or to, multiple issue crossovers, for 5 issues. That was a lot of fun.
Quickly, I will throw out, we had Millennium 5, which wraps up the miniseries, and it had some good momentum in the middle of the series here, but it just didn't follow through to the end. It was a series that it was fine, like technically proficient, but it just didn't have the heart and soul that it really needed at the end there, and it just kind of felt like it ended more or less the same place where it began. So I guess it's just kind of a placeholder series now, and it did its job just to keep the IP out there and the copyright alive, but didn't really feel like I got much out of it. I will say I read a Rob Liefeld written book. And as scary as that sounds, it actually was not the worst thing in the world.
Wow.
It's called The Covenant. It's from Image. And it's him basically telling a story from the Bible that's not actually told in the Bible. Mm-hmm. The idea being that a lot of the old history in the Bible just kind of glosses over things very quickly. And so he decides to take a spot in between two paragraphs and just write his own story of how stuff would have worked out. You have the Philistines have stolen the Ark of the Covenant, and so Samuel, the last of the great judges, is putting a team together to steal the Ark back. So he's built, you know, his version of the world of, you know, that day and age. And he actually does this funny thing where he starts the story out after a battle and then goes back several weeks to show what happens leading up to the battle. And then he's going to go, you know, further beyond. The artwork is from this Matt Horick, and apparently this is his first real book. Like, he did a fanzine at one of the cons for Thundar the Barbarian, and when he saw his Thundar the Barbarian, he thought, oh, this guy would be perfect for doing this, you know, biblical story set in the desert, you know, Old Testament stuff. And the artwork is very nice because it's not Rob Liefeld. And he actually sets up a really good, you know, action story. It's swords, it's guys in the desert, it's pagan god rituals, and snakes biting people on faces, and all that kind of good stuff to it. So it's actually worth checking out for a Rob Liefeld book. Imagine that.
Interesting.
And the art is good on it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and the art is good because it's not him. Not Rob. This is one of the big issues came out this week. G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, 214. They killed Snake Eyes, and this is his funeral. And this is, I believe it's another silent issue. I don't think there was a word balloon in the entire thing. Not only that.
Silent issue.
But this book sold out before it even went to print. So this week you not only got the issue, but you also got the second print.
No kidding.
The second print of everybody here saluting at his funeral. Wow. With a wraparound. It was a wraparound cover as well for the second print. So a lot of people are actually more excited for the second print than the first, but they both came out this week because the book sold out so quickly. But if you can get your hands on a G.I. Joe 214, it's actually a well-done silent issue Death of Snake Eyes.
Interesting. I'm going to have to do that.
Yeah. I think that'll about wrap it up for this week. Anybody else have anything else?
No, good.
Y'all touched on what I read.
I'm good.
Nobody read Archie 666?
I saw it on the stands.
William Bruce West, friend of the show, did.
Be the last Archie I'll ever read. Yeah. All right, clicks.
This is tough this week.
Clicks of the week? Yeah, I thought I had a pick, but I'm trying to decide between Secret Wars number 3 and Justice League 41.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to go with Justice League 41. I was going to go with a Star Wars book, but the more I think about this book, the more I really love just the artwork and the storyline and the characterizations and how much it felt like one of those great old stories from my youth. So I'm picking Justice League 41 for my click.
Nice. I'm going to go with Secret Wars number 3 because I definitely enjoyed reading that front to back. Although Master of Kung Fu number 2 is a surprise runner up, as is, you know, Broken World, you know, the book that we were highlighting today, you know, that was a strong contender for Click of the Week for me as well.
And I'm going to go with Doug and go with Justice League 41. I thought about some more since I was hyping Jason Fabok's arts earlier in the show. Got to finish it off by giving him and Jeff Johns the Click of the Week.
All right, cool.
Anyone know Roddy's pick?
Did he send it in?
Oh, I think he did. Or he was going to.
Check the chat.
Come on.
No, I don't see anything in there.
Oh, no, it's in the dock. He says it's in the dock.
Oh. Quick, someone pull up the dock.
He has a double.
You can't do that. That's cheating.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what you already typed it in. So it's a double delight click of the week for Roddy Cat. It's Star Wars number 6 / Darth Vader number 6.
All right, well.
You cheated, but what are you going to do? I think I did it once, so.
Yeah. All right. Take us home, Tim.
There we go.
Special shout-outs again to our guests tonight, Frank Barbary, Marissa Louise, and Christopher Peterson.
Yay!
Check out Broken World number 1 from Boom Studios. Hopefully the series gets to continue on and isn't cut off short.
Broken World number 1, in stores now.
Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at CBKron. Roddy Cat, who is not here, is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. Agent 70 is at Agent underscore 70. And Dirt is at PCN underscore Dirt. And PopCultureNetwork.com. And with that, we'll be back live next Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, for the Comic Book Chronicles. We are signing off.
Good!
It's Dr. Doom.
What's on your...